Blog Talk Radio.
I'm doing a 4-minute intro based on discussions we had in a previous episode tonight. We will discuss the third wave of globalization, a theory created by political scientist Samuel Huntington, versus authoritarianism, which is making a comeback now in the world. According to Huntington, the rise of the third wave is derived from five main causations: decrease of the legitimacy of authoritarian regimes due to increased popular expectation of periodic and competitive elections, and a poor economic performance or military failures, including unipolar strategy by the United States failing in long-term wars. I am upgrading his theory to modern day. Growth in global economic output helped modernize many less developed economies. Economic modernization, which includes structural changes like increased rates of urbanization, education, rising middle class, unleashed a constellation of social forces with the organizational capacity and education to press for democratic governance. I want to add here that it just wasn't economics. It was also the internet and social media, which like put forth cataclysmic events like the Arab Springs, which affected about 7 major Middle Eastern countries and caused regime change with 30-year-old tenured presidents like Mubarak in Egypt. Changes in the Catholic Church in the early 60s, which occurred by the Vatican II, emphasized individual rights in opposition to authoritarian rule. This shift in a worldview was especially important for the Catholic countries of the Mediterranean and Latin America, as well as the Philippines, Poland, and Hungary. The regional contingency factor, otherwise known as the domino theory, also known as demonstration effects, happens when a successive democracy in one country causes other countries to democratize. Another cause of the third wave of globalization was external factors, most notably the efforts to spread democracy by the EU and the United States. I am cutting to an audio tape now of Samuel Huntington's theory. It's going to play for about 3 to 4 minutes. I'm playing 2 clips.
Audible Studios presents Foreign Affairs, Summer 1993. The Clash of Civilizations by Samuel P. Huntington. The Next Pattern of Conflict. World politics is entering a new phase, and intellectuals have not hesitated to proliferate visions of what it will be: the end of history, the return of traditional rivalries between nation-states, and the decline of the nation-state from the conflicting poles of tribalism and globalism, among others. Each of these visions catches aspects of the emerging reality. Yet they all miss a crucial, indeed a central aspect of what global politics is likely to be in the coming years. It is my hypothesis that the fundamental source of conflict in this new world will not be primarily ideological or primarily economic. The great divisions among humankind and the dominating source of conflict will be cultural. Nation-states will remain the most powerful actors in world affairs. But the principal conflicts of global politics will occur between nations and groups of different civilizations. The clash of civilizations will dominate global politics. The fault lines between civilizations will be the battle lines of the future. Conflict between civilizations will be the latest phase in the evolution of conflict in the modern world. For a century and a half after the emergence of the modern international system with the Peace of Westphalia, the conflicts of the Western world were largely among princes, emperors, absolute monarchs, and constitutional monarchs attempting to expand their bureaucracies, their armies, their mercantilist economic strength, and, most important, the territory they ruled. In the process, they created nations.
I'm cutting to the second clip now. Keep in mind that England, who wants to remain autonomous, is controlled by a constitutional monarch. Saudi Arabia is more like a blended brotherhood monarchy because they had three separate territories in 1921, which they combined and created a central government in which over 100 years, seven brothers ruled. And you match that up to the United States, which is a republic, and Russia, which is a burgeoning authoritarian rule, you can see how the conflict of the world mounts. Now, I'm cutting to a section of this video in which he's describing, remind you that this was in 1993 and the problems are evident today, so please tune in briefly to this section.
Supported by at least three Middle Eastern governments, employed the weapon of the weak and bombed Western planes and installations and seized Western hostages. This warfare between Arabs and the West culminated in 1990 when the United States sent a massive army to the Persian Gulf to defend some Arab countries against aggression by another. In its aftermath, NATO planning is increasingly directed to potential threats and instability along its southern tier. This centuries-old military interaction between the West and Islam is unlikely to decline. It could become more virulent. The Gulf War left some Arabs feeling proud that Saddam Hussein had attacked Israel and stood up to the West. It also left many feeling humiliated and resentful of the West's military presence in the Persian Gulf, the West's overwhelming military dominance, and their apparent inability to shape their own destiny. Many Arab countries, in addition to the oil exporters, are reaching levels of economic and social development where autocratic forms of government become inappropriate and efforts to introduce democracy become stronger. Some openings in Arab political systems have already occurred. The principal beneficiaries of these openings have been Islamist movements. In the Arab world, in short, Western democracy strengthens anti-Western political forces. This may be a passing phenomenon, but it surely complicates relations between Islamic countries and the West. Those relations are also complicated by demography. The spectacular population growth in Arab countries, particularly in North Africa, has led to increased migration to Western Europe. The movement within Western Europe toward minimizing internal boundaries has sharpened political sensitivities with respect to this development. In Italy, France, and Germany, racism is increasingly open, and political reactions and violence against Arab and Turkish migrants have become more intense and more widespread since 1990. On both sides, the interaction between Islam and the West is seen as a clash of civilizations. Its next confrontation, observes M.J. Akbar, an Indian Muslim author, is definitely going to come from the Muslim world. It is in the sweep of the Islamic nations, from the Maghreb to Pakistan, that the struggle...
I'm going to stop there because we only have 45 minutes for this show. Just to give one or two examples, the Boko Haram in Nigeria, they created a stir against Christian strongholds in their own country. The overthrowing of Hosni Mubarak was a 30-year-old regime supported by the U.S. government. That was caused by the Arab Spring. The upheaval in Bahrain, in which citizens take to the street to fight against their government but are easily killed. With that, I'm going to bring in Mike and then John. Thank you for both calling back, and you're both being pulled in right now. I'm waiting for my computer to update. I want to keep in mind that what Samuel Huntington John, are you there? Okay, you guys aren't in the red yet. I have to refresh the page. Hold on. Hosni Mubarak was a significant factor. Also, there's been a ripple effect in places like Malawi, Zimbabwe. Now you guys are both on the line.
Okay. Jane, thank you very much for inviting us and put another show. And, you know, my country is the whole world. And the reason, because I have a DNA of European, African, and other places, and we all have it. If DNA to be checked, it shows we are from the world. So we are, I mean, if my mother was pregnant, I, for example, go to Russia, so I was a Russian. But if my mother was pregnant and then delivered the baby in India, then I would be an Indian. So as this lines right now we have between the nations are imaginary. When you look at, I mean, astronauts, look at the planet.
But a lot of the ethnic tribal warfare that Samuel Huntington talks about are old rivalries that have resurfaced.
Right. When
including
they look
the
at
border
the war,
wars that Trump proliferated, a lot of those border wars and resentments were there long before Trump started saying, build a wall.
Right. You see, the wall between Germany, East Germany came down. I mean, we have seen other walls of other countries came down. But, I mean...
John,
as,
you're on the
yeah,
line, by the way. You can talk
yeah,
to...
Yeah, he wants to raise it up. It doesn't make sense. And billions of dollars do you have to spend for the walls? I mean, you, first of all, we have drones right now. We have high-techs. We have, you know... unmanned, you know, planes, they can check it 24 hours
like
a day.
Like drones?
I mean, we have drones, we have unmanned planes, we have so many technologies. We can use the technology, it's cheaper, and, you know, of course, we can control our borders right now, but the you know, in North Korea, if a person, there was one American for some reason put the leg in 1 inch or 2 inch in the North Korean soil, he was captured.
The internet has proliferated the fractured relationships of the world. So, for example, if we wanted to mentally bury the conflict between North and South Korea and the aiding and abetting of the U.S. and Russia, it's right there in front of it. We can't ignore it. Just like we couldn't ignore the history of Pinochet and how the Chilean government was overthrown by Nixon and Henry Kissinger. Like, all the knowledge in the world is at our forefront and fingertips. And the proliferation has caused undue stress on people daily. John, do you have a contribution to this conversation?
Well, it would seem to me that if our country, the U.S., is strong with its own money, manufacturing and production of food, and a national identity, not about white, not about black, not about Asian, if you're an American and you believe in America, you live in America, it's about being united together for this country to be strong and allowing Mexico to be strong, allowing Mexico to have their own money, you know, whether it's a peso, whether it's a ruble, whether it's a yen, whether it's a euro dollar.
You didn't call the show last week, John. Ben was talking about how thousands of journalists and government servants and candidates have been killed in 40,000 people have been killed in Mexico this year. There's no way. Mexico is not even halfway together. They're a mess.
Right, but what I'm saying, if you'll get the thought, because we're talking about how nationalism is bad. What I'm saying is when each country is independent with their own money, their own manufacturing, their own production of food, their own management of, it's no longer, you can't take over the whole world with one dictator. The UN, I don't vote for the UN. The UN can say, we need to have zero carbon emissions so everyone walks. The UN can say, everyone needs to have only one child because that's what's good for the planet. I can't vote on that. I can't have them represent me. The beauty of America is we're democratic. But it's not democratic just by rule, like, okay, the majority votes to kill white people or black people or Asians. We can't do that. We're a republic. We have people representing us who make that decision. And they go to the courts and look at our Constitution and say, no, you can't do that.
Okay.
We have rights to life, liberty,
There's
and happiness.
There's only one problem with your theory. Not every country is fertile like the U.S. and Mexico. And, well, the one thing is you always use the U.S. as the focal point. But how about places like Japan and England who cannot raise their own crops? There is a place in Denmark that they've learned the capability of greenhouse growing, that they can grow anything in the world in their greenhouses. But traditionally, places like Ireland and England and Japan, they have to import food in order to survive. What they could do is export technology or something else to stay afloat.
They barter by, maybe they have seafood, maybe they have mineral, maybe they have oil. Each country has their own strain. Maybe they have diamonds, maybe they have trees. We all have our strength and weaknesses, but we barter and exchange with it. And what I'm saying is in 2012, Barack Obama did something that no other president has done. He was the chair, the leader of the UN National Security Council. Now, it's unusual about that. As the president of the United States, you can only be in charge of the United States. You can't be in charge of one club and another country and another association. Your sole job is to be the chief commander-in-chief of the United States. But he,
the U.S.
Sunday,
was
he,
one of five people on the Security Council. They only had one-fifth of the vote.
He was in charge that day of heading the UN National Security Council. And basically, he was in charge of the whole planet. And whatever they decide regarding, money, like to NATO, regarding environment, as far as the EPA, as far as trade and money, World Bank. Now,
what's your point?
The point being is Mike was talking about how nationalism was bad. And what I was saying, actually, if we had, say, 180 countries or 50 or 60 countries that were strong with independent money and self-governing, you can't control the whole world by one dictator. You can't have Hitler running the world or Stalin or Mao Zedong or Mussolini, because each country has their own strength and power to say, no, I have my own money. We'll trade with our own friends. The minute you knock that down and say we're all just one ecumenical mix, and whatever the UN decides, now that we all have to cow to that, we all have to ride the solar cars or bicycles, we all have to have the chip on our hand or forehead to buy or sell, and our information's in the cloud, and it's that information that the government tells us, like Dragonfly search engine on Google, they eliminate human rights. They eliminate the words student protest. They eliminate Nobel Peace Prize because Google says it's for the safety and civility of society. We respect China. So this is what Big Brother is bringing us to.
China is one of the top voting members of the UN Security Council. But they also make a lot of judicial claims that are even-handed. It's not just... most of the time, the five members of the Security Council, which changes every 4 years, they're pretty even-handed in their judicial claims. Let's say the United States was taking advantage of Afghanistan. There would be retribution for that, just like there is on Chinese human rights and the Nigerian situation with those missing girls. But did you know in less than 2 weeks ago, Meng Hongwei, a 64-year-old vice minister of China's Ministry of Public Security, was taken away. He was also involved in the Interpol. He was the worldwide Interpol president, but yet he was in Chinese public ministry cabinet. He disappeared after his plane landed from France. So even if you think the UN has complete power and control, one of a global trending leaders disappeared into thin air, just like that Jamal, the journalist from Saudi Arabia did.
Jamal Khashoggi, yeah.
Yeah, we did a show on him Sunday, but John couldn't call in.
So you would prefer a system where someone in the UN that you never voted for, that doesn't live in your country, will decide how you have to live your life in America?
Let me tell you something. First of all, United Nations must be abolished. That's number one. And they need to upgrade United Nations to the world government in a way that all the nations have equal representative in the world government. Right now we have 5 or 8 people permanent member. That's injustice, because any of those people say no, that means it's not going to be passed, whatever they want to do. So we need a real world government in a way that all the nations are permanent member of the world government, in a way that they're not going to say, we have only 5 or 8 permanent members. Right.
That's what Hitler wanted. That's what actually Stalin wanted. That's what Mao Zedong wanted. That's what the Antichrist, read Revelation, he causes all, both great and small, to receive a mark on their heads or foreheads, and with that they're unable to sell, buy or sell. And they would also say, I'm paraphrasing, they would say peace and safety and then sudden destruction. So you are welcoming the Antichrist, the one world dictator that will control the world.
Is that not Antichrist? I mean, you label it. Yeah. If I don't like something, if I don't like Pepsi, I say Pepsi is
What if you don't like the one world order? What if you don't like the leader and he decides that a certain group of people needs to be eliminated for safety, like all the communists in China or in Russia or in China or in Cuba, all the revolutionaries who were shot and killed or the killing fields in Cambodia? Is that what you really want?
We don't have a world government. Because we don't have global, true world government in a way that address all these issues and problems, and everybody will be permanent member. Right now we have 8 or 5 people a permanent member. This is bullshit. United Nations must be abolished and restructured in a way that everybody has equal representation, and that's why we will all the there are lots of things needs to be done with the world government. I mean, a true world government. Maybe many world government counts, they may not last long because they are not doing the correct job. So they keep making it better and better and better. That's what it is. It's like when you are a kid, you get up, you fell down, you get up, you fell down until you are able to walk. So same thing, world government, maybe at the first is still need modification until the true world government comes out of it, and a global universal army, global currency, global education, free education for all, global health care for all the people of the world, and we bring the global tax of 5% to all the world, and everybody will be happy. You have more paycheck, everybody have better standard of living, so then the wars automatically will cease. The reason we have war because we have nationalism. Nationalism in Iran.
The UN does more than have a Security Council. They also have a food program, an economic and social council, an international court of justice, which tried Milosevic for the Yugoslavian terrorism that happened. They have health mandates. It's not just it's not like this overpowering body that has absolute control over other governments.
So you're saying it would be similar to the Clinton Foundation, where they get $2 billion worth of money and only 10% goes to the causes, or where in Haiti or in all these countries in Africa.
That has nothing to do with the UN.
Well, the concept that the charities and foundations are founded, tons of money gets poured into it, and by the way, we have our taxes that we don't even have a choice over. They pull this money out of us. And the money doesn't go to those people. It goes to these institutions, and it gets funneled into different causes, whatever they want it to be. It doesn't. You might give them $1 billion, and they build like 5 houses and go, here's habitat for the planet.
No, you don't have absolute proof that the Clintons use 90% of those donations as waste. There's no proof.
Go to Haiti. How many houses have they built?
They have, and they've also built health.
My friend,
we're not talking about
advise...
the Clintons. We're talking about the precepts of the UN right now.
Talk about the UN.
The
UN is building
houses in Central Africa, and they're providing raw materials for that. I could look up a number of other things. What we're debating right now is globalization and the effect of economic distribution.
Right, so you believe that government can distribute properly for the planet.
I think that they're trying. There's human error in everything. I don't think the United Nations is all bad. It's a place where... It's been in existence 73 years, and they attempt to identify issues, including, extreme wars that have been ongoing. They attempt to solve problems. They don't have an absolute mandate, and there's a lot of disagreement. And I don't think they're overpowering.
So the ruling class of people that are in the UN, by the way, are these very poor people who make $10,000 a year, or are these the Bernie Sanders, the Pelosi's, the Feinstein's? You go over to England, the royal family, you go to the royal family.
How come you don't announce any wealthy Republicans, just only wealthy Democrats?
Oh, Donald Trump was bailed out by the Rothschilds in the 80s with Taj Mahal. Jared Kushner works, actually, Soros actually helped him out in a few years back, in the 90s. They actually did some ventures together.
Let me talk to you, please, John.
Yes.
You see, I want you to go futurewave.org, futurewave.org, and then also go to worldgovernment.org, and then get it true information, and then maybe some of your misunderstanding may be solved easily, my friend, because we need to claim our rights. Our rights is, according to UN Charter, you have right to leave your country of origin and come back to your country of origin. So
We are world citizens.
I mean, the national passport is only say identify you as which country you came from. But world citizen passport is claiming that you are a world citizen. I support world citizenship. I mean, there was just 2 weeks ago in New York, there was a global citizen concert, and there will be another one in India in a few months, my friend. Go ahead, sir.
So what you're saying is you, when you read in the Bible about a one-world order where a person or a group of peoples, nations, you know, the ten kings with the horns that arise out of the ocean, the Bible is actually lying to you. It's not accurate, or that it's misrepresenting that we can actually trust government. Now, in a socialist program, you realize that you have no property rights, that the state controls the means of production, so you no longer own your own companies. And corporations, which used to be, pre the 1900s, used to be you were given a grant or a charter, you had to serve the public. But in the 20s, a Rockefeller felt that was really crippling his, handicapping his business, so he started paying.
I want to cut in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
The one world government is not necessarily the UN.
It's
and
not?
I'm going to explain. Let me explain in a one-minute soundbite, okay? Just give me a second. The one world government might emerge through war, but it doesn't necessarily have to emerge through an international institution. The primary purpose of the UN is to achieve international cooperation in solving international problems on economic, social, cultural, and humanitarian character. By 1980, they had eradicated smallpox around the world. They have other programs like the UN Developmental Program. And if you read about the Bretton, Bretton Woods Agreement, they have created organizing bodies of the World Bank Group and IMF, as John discussed before, the World Health Organization, the Joint UN Program to Eradicate or Protect People Who Have HIV and AIDS and Distribute Medicine, and on and on and on. They also have the United Nations Healthcare Red Cross that maintain Syrian refugee camps in Zafari, in Jordan, and other places in Turkey. So I put you guys on mute for 30 seconds. I don't agree with, I do agree in that a one world government could cause, be a cataclysmic cause to the end of the world, but I think it's going to happen through warfare and domination, not through an international body like the UN.
Yeah, no, that's I actually, United Nations must be upgraded to the world government. Whatever they're doing, it's kind of okay, but still we need more. And we need a global money, global army, global healthcare system for everybody. We need a global tax of, a flat tax of 5% for all the citizens of the world.
The UN does not have a standing army. And look how the NATO forces have failed in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places. The NATO forces do not create a better world by being present in those countries. They created more destruction and death, even for their own security forces.
Exactly.
Jane, you just answered the question. The UN was first attempted as the League of Nations after World War One, and then when did they try to resurrect it at the United Nations after World War Two? War always creates this desperation of we have to save the planet, let's unite. And what came out of this? A World Bank, a one World Bank. Jane, you just said it.
Why do you always talk down to us like you're condescending?
I feel like you always talk down to me in a condescending way.
You think the One World Bank controls all the... The One World Bank does not control all the banks in the U.S.
Because Donald Trump stepped in. Barack Obama was handing the torch to Hillary. She was in Saudi Arabia. She was Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, Jared
Wonderland.
Kushner has holdings in Saudi Arabia, too.
Yeah.
You always
That's
have
right.
to politically polarize everything. The World Bank
Not
Group is a family of five international organizations that leverage loans to developing countries.
Yes.
They're not the people who pull the strings in places like Greenland that wiped out a whole country from greedy bastards who were running dirty banks.
I voted for George Bush and was ignorant of the fact of how Saudi manipulated and petrodollar controlled he was, which was Clinton's, which was Bush, which was Obama, which is Hillary. And again,
Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who the new president said he has him under his thumb.
And yet, at the same breath, Mike is saying that Trump is a nationalist, which is anti-one world order. Now, you just answered the question because I said 1 + 1 = 2. You have one world government, one world bank. Equals New World Order, and you say, no, it doesn't equal that. A one world bank doesn't equal. You know,
I don't think the United Nations is the perpetuating organization that will cause cataclysmic destruction that will bring Jesus Christ back. I think it's going to be a subversive government or a military produced organization like NATO that continues to get involved in wars and kills people.
So you don't think that the Rothschild family, which spread from one brother went to Germany, one went to London, England, one went to France, and the other one went to, they went to two other directions. The other was in the Middle East, and the other one was also towards Africa. You don't think that that had any, that's got nothing to do with the Bilderbergers, the Rockefellers, or the Skull and Bones, the New World Order, George Bush
talked
about.
I do think there's a group of a small wealthy group of people that control a lot of the world finances, but I don't look at it only in terms of dark evil. I think it's going to take a lot more than that to topple the world.
So when CIA, Daddy Bush, announced on September 11th, 9/11, 1990, he said, this is the New World Order. We're going after Saddam Hussein. How come? Because he was in Kuwait, and the Saudis were getting very nervous, and he's got to protect the bin Laden family and the crown princes and the whole royal kingdom there. So he goes in, he sends our boys over there, and then later on, 11 years later, to the day, you don't think there's any coincidence on September 11, 2001, we have 9/11, and his son says, we got to go in after them and find the weapons of mass destruction. And he said, a fire has been lit in the hearts of men, and or in the minds of men, which is straight out of your Illuminati handbook, or that 11 years to the day, on September 11th, 2012, we have Benghazi with Hillary Clinton. You don't think there's any coincidence?
I think the Benghazi incident is something that's been blown up by the right. Four lousy people died and thousands die in the Middle East every damn day. We toppled the Libyan government. And
that's
one thing I'm not proud of.
We did mess up with the 1951 Mossad.
And the reason that Bush went into the Gulf War is because Kuwait was an English outpost. They were protecting a wealthy, oil-rich country, and they didn't give a flying blank about Iraq that was in a huge recession at the time.
Yeah.
And
so,
I don't think it correlates to 9/11 either, no, despite your numerology. The reason why 9/11 happened is because the radical Muslims outsmarted the U.S. government and they overtook our planes and they screwed us over because they wanted to end Western civilization as we know it.
And so Dick Cheney was so outsmarted that he was able to set up Halliburton, and we were able to keep the petrodollars strong, And Hillary, by the way, never took an oath. Never, they still have a deposition out for her. They want her actually. They want to subpoena her to testify. I wonder why she doesn't want to testify. I wonder why they don't want to declassify the FISA warrant, which is paid for by the Clinton Foundation. Is anyone
right
wanting to open transparency? What would it expose outside of Rob Rosenstein's name, or maybe Barack Obama, who helps launch the PRISM program with, as you know, Snowden, to get information on the National Security Agency on every human being on the planet? Am I making up things, or is this, again, am I ignorant about the facts?
Let me tell you something, my friend. You know, that's why... I mean, United States, UN trying hard to bring peace and stability for the globe, but they can't because we have only 5 to 8 permanent members, Russia, France, USA, and I think Peru and a few others ones. So therefore, that's not justice. If you have and other members of the UN are just sitting right there for fun, and then whatever those 8 or 5 permanent members decide, then they say, okay. Everybody say, okay.
It's not an end-all-be-all organization. They don't throw down the sledgehammer and everyone has to abide. In fact, the World Bank Group, which is only one arm of the UN, their sole purpose is to eliminate poverty and develop economically in second and third world countries. So how can that be evil? I think, John, your conspiracy theories lumps everybody into one category of evil versus good.
So you're saying the Federal Reserve, when we had the bank bailout,
that's the U.S., it's not the U.N.
That's right.
Let's understand. So you're saying when all the banks, like Chase Manhattan, New York, or when our Bank of America or Wells Fargo or...
That was pure greed by the top parachute executives in each bank who mismanaged flimsy loans and created flimsy loans. It has nothing to do with the government. It has to do with private financing and bad choices.
Because they keep giving loans to the people that even they are not qualified. So they give them 10%, 15% rate. So they screwed up themselves. So as a result, then everything is went downward. So we are going to have another crash coming very soon. November surprise is underway, my friend, because we have got 8,000 points come.
The show's
and then
cutting off
time.
In 3 minutes. I'll let you guys talk.
So you know about the bailout money where $50 billion went to Germany, billions went to England, billions went to other European countries. Why were they also bailed out when we had to bail out our own banks who – print the money, who create the bonds, the futures, the derivatives, the fractional calculating that they do, fractional banking. Who makes the money out of all that? Is it the American public or is it the rich and elite who are centered overseas in different banks, such as Switzerland?
Okay. Do you want to have a good healthcare system? Do you want free education from day first to the you get your degree AA or etc.? Do you want to have global education, education, a global world army that stands for real justice, means in one of the nations rises against anyone, they will go and eat them. Five people against one, can I? No, you can. But 100, we have 200 countries united under one banner, world government and world constitution. Under the new world constitution, then we will have much better everything. Go ahead, sir.
So you're saying that people should get free education, free medical, free whatever they want, and I have to pay for it. I want to have
globally. You pay 5% tax. You pay 5% tax, my friend. You right now, you pay a lot of tax and you don't get a damn shit. Right now, 5% tax, everybody pays around the globe. Everybody gets everything that they need.
So I decide I want to have three kids and a new car and college education for everyone.